Hello, everybody. It's time for the Mainland Podcast. It is Michael Citro here, the managing editor of themainland.com. And we're all about Orlando City. Joining me is one of our senior columnists, Austin David. Austin, how you doing tonight, buddy?
Pretty good. You know, wish we were coming off a win, but, you know, things happen.
Yeah, well, the six-game unbeaten streak in all competitions is no more, but still riding a bit of a streak at home. And we'll try to get back on the horse there against Colorado Rapids on Wednesday, as we got a lot to talk about because these fixtures are just coming fast and furious now. It's unbelievable. We've actually played twice since the last Mainland Podcast, starting with an unbelievable midweek game last week against Charleston Battery on the road. Austin, we heard all along how much Orlando City wanted to win and was going to take this competition seriously. What did you think when you saw the starting lineup?
I kind of expected it, to be honest. Even though, Coach Heath said, we want to win this. We're going to, do our best to put our best lineup out there. But, and this was a big but during his press conference in the, after the DC United game.
Wait. Did you just say Adrian Heath had a big butt?
Did I?
I think you better take that back. All right. you were saying?
Yes. So he said, any player that is carrying any sort of knock or injury will not play, which is kind of like a way of saying we're going to play our best lineup, but not really, because we're going to say they're injured or whatnot. And they may have been, Kaká did not travel. That was kind of expected. Breck Shea traveled, I believe, but he did not play. Mm-hmm. And then you had a few guys here and there on the bench, but, credit to the lineup that was out there. It was kind of a different lineup for sure, but it was mainly guys that have played Charleston before. USL guys like Tyler Turner, Luke Bowden, obviously, Lewis Neal, guys who have actually played last year against this team. So there's, it's still not a bad lineup to put out there, because they were able to beat Charleston last year. So to think that, they wouldn't have as much of a chance this year just because they're, bench players in the MLS is kind of silly. So, when I saw the lineup, I knew it wasn't going to be like a 6-0 victory for Orlando City. I knew it was going to be just like when Orlando City played Charleston in the USL, a really tight, well-contested game, and that's exactly what it was.
Yeah, well, you got to put a dollar in the swear jar because you said the MLS in that that last little ramble. But, to me, it wasn't about the talent, because the talent was there. Mm-hmm. The talent was certainly should be able to handle a USL team. For me, it was putting that many new cogs in the machine for a game like that with that kind of importance. If you win five games, you win the cup and you go to CONCACAF Champions League. I know that's a big, big deal for Orlando City ownership, and it's a big deal for Adrian Heath and, quite frankly, the players as well. And we'd obviously love to see CONCACAF Champions League matches here in Orlando City. But when you put that many new guys together, it doesn't matter if they're good, or how much talent they have. There's a chemistry that takes time to build. And when you've got a new guy next to you, like Luke Bowden had, some of the midfielders might have had new people next to them, it doesn't work as well. And without number 10 in the middle, it certainly doesn't, flow as well. So, for me, it was painfully obvious that it was going to be a bigger struggle than any of us wanted. But Charleston came out and they took the lead. Orlando City came back, tied it up. Charleston took the lead again. After a scoreless first half, where basically neither team did anything, there were a total of 8 goals scored, 4 by each team, 2 each in the second half and 2 each in extra time. One thing I never thought I would see is a player get a hat trick on penalty kicks. And we did get to see that. The Carlos Rivas haters will, complain about the one that he missed in the penalty kick shootout. But the guy made 3 penalties that were absolutely never in doubt. I mean, he played a pretty interesting game, didn't he?
He really did. And I feel like people are still going to say, oh, well, he hasn't scored one in open play. And That's true. He did have a nice shot the other night against Montreal, but we'll get into that a little bit later. Rivas, the thing that he has going for him is speed. And I feel like there were moments in the game where he really utilized that well, and then there were other moments where he tried a bit too hard, just kind of like how he's been doing so far this season. But going against a team like the Charleston Battery, they've got a decent back line. I've seen some of their names: Emmanuel Ejedi, Taylor Mueller's. These guys who have been there for the past few years. It's not like you're just going up against a run of the mill USL team. They're still talented, and the way that the US Open Cup has gone with all the USL teams beating the NASL teams. I thought it was good. It was going to be a good experience for some of the younger guys. Whatever the result was, just to get some playing time in a meaningful game, not just an international friendly or whatnot. Something that actually mattered in a tournament style setting. So there was a little bit more added pressure in that sense. And I think a lot of those guys played very well. Obviously, you had Tyler Turner go down with an injury after his beautiful assist to Lewis Neal on that first goal, which was unfortunate to see because he had been playing very well. But then you saw Rafael Ramos come in and absolutely dominate that right hand side. I mean, it wasn't even funny how his skill on the ball and his speed just changed the game for Orlando City.
Yeah, the move that he made right between two guys to draw that penalty was like he was shot out of a gun. He ducked outside one guy, inside another guy, and boom, he's in the box, and Mueller bundled him over. It was no doubt penalty for me. It was interesting to see some of the young guys get in, and you really got a good look at the future because I think Connor Donovan is going to be a good MLS player down the road. I think he has been a very bright surprise as a rookie, and we haven't got to see a lot of him because he hasn't dressed much, and then away on U20 duty, he hasn't really dressed for the U.S. that much, or he's dressed, but he's sat on the bench. But I think from what we've seen of him in preseason, the way he played against Ponte Preta in the friendly, in the way he played the other night, I think you see that he's going to be a good player. But for me, let's get to our man of the match. Earl Edwards Jr., without any question, kept Orlando City in the game, made three saves and penalties. Obvious choice for me. Is that the same for you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, people, I saw this on Twitter and I was kind of blown away. People were saying, why wasn't Donovan Ricketts playing? This guy's terrible. He's let in four goals. And these are obviously people who didn't watch the game. They just saw that he let in four goals and that it went to penalties. So, I can kind of forgive them for that. But, you watch the game, even though he let in four goals, they weren't all necessarily his fault. And, the ones that he was actually able to save, I mean, he gets in good position. He's got, great reflexes, anything you could pretty much ask of a goalkeeper. I mean, there was a reason that they signed him, after preseason out of the, I think there was two other goalies who were trying out for that position. He obviously stood out to the team. So the fact that he's probably going to be the number two coming up if Donovan Ricketts chooses to retire at the end of this year. And I have no problem with that whatsoever. Backing up Tally Hall, I think he'll be great if he's called into action and he can learn under Tally for the next few years and possibly be the number one goalkeeper in 3 to 5 years.
Yeah, we've seen he's a really good shot stopper. That much he's already figured out. Positioning-wise, I think he's pretty solid. He's learning from Tally Hall. The one thing that he's really got to learn, and he's going to learn from one of the best, is how to keep his defense organized. And that's some of what the problems were against Charleston. His defensive line wasn't that organized at times and had some issues. I can't really fault Edwards on any of the goals, even though there were four of them. I mean, especially the one that brought them to within one was just an absolute rocket. I think it was Harrison Heath that gave the guy like 10 yards, and he took it. Mm-hmm. and he put it in upper 90, just an absolute laser. One of the goals was a penalty, so, I mean, you can't really fault him there. I mean, he stopped three of them. on 10 shooters. So good to see Earl Edwards Jr. He's our man of the match for that. Our next opponent, of course, we were going to get either Chicago Fire, Columbus Crew, or Charlotte Independence. So, of course, we got Columbus Crew.
Of course.
But at least it's a home match. And so I think there's a nice little rivalry building with the Columbus Crew. I don't want to hear that we're not your rivals. I didn't say you were. I said there's a nice rivalry building. So let's just leave it at that. It's, if you have watched the games, you see there's a bit of a chippiness to them. These teams don't seem to like each other a whole lot. They respect each other a lot. I mean, and that's the basis of what good rivalries are built upon when you look at the great rivalries in sports. You know, Celtics, Lakers, Ohio State, Michigan, that kind of thing. You see these rivalries are built on just, you know, an intensity and a respect for the other team and just a really strong will to beat the other team. So I think it's building with Columbus and certainly playing them four times this year, and that doesn't even count if both teams make the playoffs, is going to help build that because, you know, familiarity breeds contempt is what they say. So a loss with 10 men, a draw with Columbus having 10 men. Do you think we get through a game without a red card next week, Austin?
I don't know. Maybe we'll see both teams play with 10 men at the rate this is going. Who knows? That might be fun to see. But, you know, it's a U.S. Open Cup game. Luckily for Orlando, they don't have a league game, in the midst of that week. They have, the game on Wednesday against Colorado. Then that next Tuesday, they play Columbus at home, and then they don't play until July 4th in Real Salt Lake. So there's a good spacing in between the games, at least for Orlando's side. I'm not sure what Columbus is.
Well, Columbus plays on the weekend, so it's. I want to say they play Friday, but either way, they're playing, you know, a few days before that game. So it's going to be interesting to see what lineup they trot out Tuesday night at the Citrus Bowl, and it'll be interesting to see if Adrian Heath comes back with a more normal, you know, first team. I know this is very important to, like I said, to him and to the ownership. I know Flavio is very big on Champions League, so. It'll be interesting to see if he, he brings them all out, the big guns, you know, the Brekshays, the Kakas, all of those guys. And also it'll be interesting to see who's healthy. We're going to talk about Montreal, so this is a good segue. Aurelien Collin went down over the weekend with another apparent hamstring issue. Don't know the severity of it. As we record this, it's Monday night. We did note that the first team was in the gym today, not out on the training field. So Aurelien Collin, at this point, we don't know if he's going to be available for Wednesday night against the Rapids. And Turner, after injuring himself, I was told he seemed okay after the game, but he did not dress in Montreal. That's not necessarily indicative of him not being able to go, but he didn't dress. So possibly a couple of defensive issues with some injuries. But Austin, let's get into that Montreal game a little bit because it really did seem like, you know, even the fact that Kaká and Brekshay didn't play in the midweek and some of those guys didn't play some of the regulars didn't play, some didn't play very much, it really looked like a sluggish and tired Orlando City Lions team out there.
Yeah, and I'm really not sure what it was because I know Coach Heath after the game, you know, he said, you know, you can't blame it on being tired. The travel schedule, I guess, with the Columbus game, with that whole drama in Columbus that was going on, then having to travel that.
Charleston.
That's what I meant.
Charleston. Yeah.
What did I say?
You said Columbus. Yeah, you were still in Columbus. And for those that don't know, the big shooting in Charleston this week, if you haven't heard, you know, I think 9 people were killed. It was at a church across the street from where Orlando City was staying. And after the game, which went 120 minutes, the shootings happened, I think, right around the game's stoppage time, like right around that time. And after the game, the team had, you know, went to overtime, extra time, went to penalties. And then they were held on the bus. They didn't get to go directly back to the hotel. So, I mean, there was some anxiety and there was some stress. And you know, they didn't get to bed probably on time and it kind of threw off their schedule. But the other thing is, you were starting to touch on, Austin, is that the team was away from home all week. They left Monday, and they stayed in Charleston till the day after the game. Then that the afternoon after the game, they flew to Montreal. They were gone all week. And that people say, well, you know, that's not a big deal. The professional athletes are used to that. Being away from home and, you know, living in hotels and eating, whether you're eating in a hotel banquet room or whether you're eating at restaurants, it puts you off your schedule and it throws you off. And it's little things like that can make a big difference over the course of a season when you're used to a routine and then that routine gets screwed up.
Yeah. And, you know, I was touching on Adrian Heath's comments after the game. He said, you know, I think there are three or four guys who can hold their head up. The rest, nah, not good enough. And you know, that comment, it's I love Adrian Heath when he just kind of, you know, lets it all out there. And, you know, he also said, like, that's not us. We're better than that. I said to the players, there's ways to lose soccer games, and that's not one of them. You know, and he says it like it is. And, you know, it's the exact same thing he would probably say to the players, probably a little more edited. But, mm-hmm. You know, so, you know, having that kind of charisma as a coach, I think, you know, we've touched on Adrian Heath a lot. And, you know, there's not much more to say about the guy. Everyone seems to just love him. So, you know, I don't know.
He's a good coach. He shoots from the hip. So he's a dream for, you know, when you cover a team, you want a guy who's going to be honest. Mm-hmm. And maybe he's sometimes honest to a fault. I mean, all you got to do is look back to the Don Dwyer situation.
Yeah.
It's... Personally, Austin, I got to say, after 120 minutes, a hard 90 minutes against DC United, then a hard 120 minutes against Charleston, I was really surprised to see Lewis Neal and Luke Bowden in the starting lineup Saturday at Montreal. Did that surprise you at all?
Yeah, absolutely. More Neal, especially with his positioning. He was sitting on that right-hand side. He's a left-footed player. Having played that much, he's one of the only three players that are over 30 years old on the team. It really surprised me that, and the fact that he played as much as he did, you know, in that Montreal game. Yeah, I just felt like, you know, I don't know what was wrong with Eric Avila, but I feel like he would have been better in that situation. But you know, Bods, I think. You know, he's been the Iron Man for Orlando City for years. You know, back in USL, when you're playing a lot more games in a lot less amount of time, he's been playing 90 minutes every single one of those games. So I wasn't worried about Bowden as much as I was about Neal, and it really kind of showed with Neal how the tiredness and the fatigue kind of caught up with him. Same with Bowden, but I feel like Bowden tried to push through it a bit. He still was able to try and get some crosses in there and push the ball forward a bit. But, you know, with Neal, I feel like his age and may have caught up to him a little bit on that one.
Well, they both fought really hard all night, I thought. It was just a matter of, you know, their legs betray, you know, they betray you after a while. You know, you can only do so much before your body says enough. And there were times, certainly in that second half, that I thought Bowden could get forward, and his legs weren't there, so he would stop and kind of cut inside and look for a pass. And, you know, credit Montreal, because they know he wants to get it on his left foot, and they were trying to force him back. But he also, like, ordinarily would have taken some of those chances himself, and I just don't think he thought that he had the legs to get there. And you know, credit to him for not just turning the ball over for you know, listening to his body and saying, this is what I can do and this is what I can't do. But I think it handcuffed the team that so many guys looked tired. But it wasn't just, you know, it wasn't just weariness. It was a sluggishness that kind of comes from, like I said, getting out of your routine. You get out of your routine, it doesn't matter that you're training and you're sort of trying to keep the same schedule. You're sleeping in unfamiliar places, and that kind of affects you. And it affects you on a level that really is... you don't necessarily notice it. So I think it's very easy to have that affect you for a game, especially it's really hard at the highest level to stay up for every game and to be hungry for every game. And the players said all the right things, and they, you know, they, their body language was good. But then when they got out there on that field, they just didn't look like they had it. And in fact, the guy who was the best rested guy on the field, because he didn't play or travel as much, was Kaká, and he had one of the worst games of the entire team. Especially, he seemed like he was just trying to do a little too much. I mean, he did some good things. I mean, he had, don't get me wrong, he's still Kaká. He still is going to have a few moments of magic, and he did that. But I thought Montreal did a pretty good job on him, and you know, he got a really good shot off that Lawrence Simon headed away. And but other than that, he didn't really pose a threat.
Yeah, it's. I feel like it's been a. It's kind of a thing that's been happening with him. It's not just this one game against Montreal. I feel like the last two or three games, he hasn't been the Kaká that we saw in the beginning of the year. And I, you know, I don't know what it is, if it's fatigue catching up with him with the MLS schedule and not being used to it, having to play almost 90 minutes, pretty much 90 minutes every single game. It might be something he's not used to, because I don't think he's played a full 90 for a while. I know he didn't do it in Sao Paulo, and I'm pretty sure he didn't do it in AC Milan over the last 2 years. So, you know, going from coming off the bench or playing at, you know, 55, 65 minutes to playing 90 minutes every single game, you know, it's a challenge to get used to. Plus, it's a new league, a new team. There's so
and a
many...
physical league.
Right.
It's a physical league.
Exactly. And, you know, Kaká, in the beginning of the year, he did well with that. You saw that he could, you know, push people off the ball and kind of use his magic to get around players and create space. But, you know, I don't know if it's catching up with him just yet. Maybe the coach needs to give him a rest one of these games. I don't know. It's a tricky situation, I think, but we'll see on Wednesday how he fares against this Colorado Rapids team.
Well, one good thing about him is he's had bad games before, and he's bounced back very, very strongly. I think about that game at DC United where he was – that might have been one of his worst games in MLS, and he bounced back and had a pretty good effort the next week. So it'll be interesting to see how he does. We'll have to keep an eye on our captain because we love him and we want him to do well. We wish him well, and hopefully it was an aberration. I think when guys are, you know, over 30, they get north of 30 and you start having to play these games, you know, and especially since Orlando City plays on turf in a very, very hot and humid environment in a physical league, it's going to take some toll. But, you know, the good thing is they're used to that when other teams come in. So you got Colorado coming in on Wednesday night. They're not going to be used to this.
Mm-hmm.
So that should be an advantage, hopefully. But, you're right, and Adrian Heath was right. Not very many people had a great game the other night for Orlando City. One guy I thought who did play well, he's my man of the match. We'll get to yours as well. Sean St. Ledger, I thought, had a really, really fine game. You know, was he perfect? No, nobody on the team was. But I thought that, by and large, he played very, very well. And I thought Aurelien Collin played well until the injury. I thought he was very, you know, he made some his typical vital challenges to prevent scoring chances. And I thought St. Ledger did a good job not only with Collin, but in his absence pairing with Seb Hines. I thought he did well to try to keep the back line organized. What were your thoughts for man of the match?
Yeah, it's kind of hard to pick a man of the match with such a lethargic game, but I'd have to agree with you with St. Ledger. You know, he played the full 90, you know, was there defensively. I think I feel like that St. Ledger pairs up better with Collin than Seb Hines did early in the year. And I you know, he's a bit more experienced, St. Ledger is. He's got national team play, you know, and he's... I've been happy with him over the last few games. Sebs has kind of had a bad run of form lately. You know, both him and Martin Patterson, their 6-month loan deals are coming up at the end of the month here. Still not sure what's going to happen with that, if they're going to be signed to a contract with Orlando City or if they're going to be released. So that's, you know, that's something to watch out for over the next few weeks. But going back to St. Ledger, yeah, he was my man of the match.
Well, I think that what's interesting for me is I think St. Ledger and Hines make a pretty good pairing, and I think part of that is because Colin got so much rest in the preseason that they were able to forge this sort of partnership. And so they looked good when Colin was out. So if Colin does have to miss Wednesday night against Colorado, at least we know that two guys will be playing center back that are used to playing with one another, and you know, they're familiar with each other, and they sort of have a good chemistry going. I thought they played well during that stretch. Because you remember that 5-game unbeaten streak, Colin wasn't in there for all of that. So it'll be really cool to see what happens too with Patterson and Hines, because both of their teams in Europe released them, so they really have no place to go. It's really kind of working out to sit well for Orlando City if they want to maybe bring them in at a little bit less money and try to go after some folks in the transfer market here. I think July 8th is the first day of the MLS summer transfer window. But we know they're going to go after people hard. And I was giving our friends over at the Blue Testament some grief the other night about Dom Dwyer, saying, yeah, our former and future Lion Dom Dwyer just scored a goal, and having some banter with their friends. So I was trolling them a little bit on purpose. It was just having a little bit of fun on a Sunday night.
Yeah, he needs to come home. You know, his real home's in Orlando because he scored so many goals here.
His spiritual home, as Adrian Heath said, yeah. His spiritual. I've never heard anybody invoke the spiritual home for talking about a player, but
you know, leave it to Inchi to do the unexpected.
My spiritual home is a world of beer. So. So anyway, I think that's probably more than we ever wanted to say about the Montreal match. You know, two games down with Montreal. We've got one more with them at home. Hopefully, from what I've seen, the Impact don't travel as well as they play at Stade Saputo. So hopefully we can get our 3 points against them when they come down, because that's a big matchup when you're talking about the last few playoff spots. And actually, Montreal may be pushing for much more than a lower playoff spot the way that they've been going this year. I think they're fourth in the East in points per game, and they just have got a lot of games to make up because of the being out for Champions League. So maybe Montreal's better than we gave them credit for being early in the season.
Yeah, we kind of undersold them a little bit, I guess.
Well, that happens when you finish dead last in the MLS the year before. So, you know, that's where it's at. But why don't we turn our attention to the Colorado Rapids and Wednesday night's game. All right, we're going to bring in our guest now. We've got managing editor of the Burgundy Wave, John Roche, with us this week. John covers the Colorado Rapids. How you doing tonight?
I'm good, guys. How you doing?
Can't complain at all. Well, we could, but nobody listens, so. So we won't. We'll just skip all that and just get on to the good stuff. So I did manage to catch the Colorado match the other night against FC Dallas, and that was a ridiculous goal to draw the team level there by Dylan Serna. And I just want to know, I know that the Rapids haven't gotten off to a great start, to put it mildly, but are they going to be able to carry that momentum into Central Florida for the upcoming match against Orlando City?
You know, it's really a head versus heart question. My heart says, hell yes, they are going to build on this, you know, late goal that helped them tie up the FC Dallas game, and they're going to bring that when they go down to Citrus Bowl, and that's going to convert into a win, and it's going to be wonderful. However, my head is logical in that they were at home, and it took them 87 minutes to score a goal. And, you know, you have to be a realist when you look at this. And right now, they're struggling. I'd like to think that they can go into Orlando and get a result. But the only time they played down there, they got beat 3-1 in the U.S. Open Cup back in 2013. So not that that's a good barometer of how things are going to go. But, you know, but based on the Rapids' current form, I don't know that they can go into Orlando and get a win.
Gotcha. Now, John, you know, like you said, the struggles of Colorado have been well documented, but you know, there have been some bright spots here and there, right?
Absolutely, their defense They're giving up, I believe it's 0.86 goals a game, which is pretty darn fantastic when you think about it. It's especially in Major League Soccer, where you've got so many teams that really are pressing and are scoring a lot of goals. The Rapids defense is quite good, and it's very, very underappreciated by, I think, a lot of MLS circles. There is a lot good going on you know, along the back line. They've played 9 different players in their back four this year and still are surrendering less than a goal a game. And I don't know how many clubs are out there that would turn that down, you know. And so from that perspective, they're doing great. I think for Rapids fans, the frustration is just where are the goals coming from? You know, for as good as they're preventing goals from going in, they're not scoring a whole lot at all.
You know, I think the biggest disappointment for Rapids fans has to be that Pablo shaved his mustache. It is for me anyway, and I'm not a Rapids fan, but that was a big disappointment to me. But because he had that whole "There Will Be Blood" movie look to him going, and I thought that was pretty cool. That was unique. So tell me about the Rapids, formation wise and attack wise. Are they doing the fashionable 4-2-3-1 like everybody seems to be doing these days? And are they a team that likes to possess the ball, or do they like to concede possession and then score off the counterattack?
4-2-3-1 is what they're doing. You know, I think that there have been times that we've looked at it and we've said to ourselves, what are you doing 4-2-3-1? You know, they seem to be so married with it that sometimes they're missing other opportunities, but they are very, very committed to the lone striker up front, and they believe in possessing the ball. And if you look at their possession stats, they do a great job of holding onto the ball. Their passing numbers are good. Their passing conversion numbers are good. Unfortunately, all the possession in the world doesn't matter if you're not able to make that final pass or have that final touch. You know, in the Dallas game, they had the ball for over 50% of the time, over 55% of the time, which is fantastic, but it doesn't matter when you're only generating 3 shots on goal. And that's really where the disconnect is coming, is that, so, you know, the ball's moving up from the defense, it's moving up through the midfield, but that final touch, that final pass just isn't there, and it's costing the Rapids points. And in MLS, it's such a parity-driven league. I mean, anybody really at this point has a shot of making the playoffs. The Rapids are, you know, finding themselves on the outside looking in, and I really feel that when the season's over, they're going to rue those missed chances.
Gotcha. Now, you talked about the struggles up top, you know, with strikers and whatnot, but you guys just brought in Kevin Doyle at the end of May to be that guy, you know, straight out of Wolverhampton. I mean, has he not really performed up to standards or up to expectations?
I don't know that he hasn't performed up to expectations. I think that he is still you know, let me go back. I think the transition from any other league to Major League Soccer is a lot more difficult than I think a lot of players give it credit for. You know, certainly you've got certain players like David Beckham or Kaká or Thierry Henry who come in and they're able to light the league on fire. Those players are very special and they are few and far between. I think with the Kevin Doyle, he has an amazing amount to offer this club and quite frankly, offer MLS. But it's transition. I had a chance to sit down with Kevin when he was introduced by the club, and you know, he and I talked for close to 20 minutes. And what I would say is that he is still, you know, his wife and children are still in Ireland, so he's still making that transition to Colorado. He's not completely 100% fit yet, and so he hasn't played the full 90. And so I think his transition is taking longer than probably he wanted, and as well as the club. And so that's come into play. Also, the Rapids signed Luis Solignac from Argentina. He is getting closer to getting on the board in our U.S. Open Cup match this weekend. He was very, very lively, very good with the ball, had, you know, a couple of decent shots that, quite frankly, the goalkeeper made good stops on. So I think it's coming. The question is, when is it all going to come together? You know, when is that chemistry going to be to the point where the Rapids are able to put goals, you know, in the back of the net on a consistent basis?
Well, that sounds like a familiar thing for us, certainly here in Orlando. John, Orlando City has done a very nice job against the Western Conference, which is weird when you look at the trend in MLS. The East has mostly struggled against the West, but Orlando City has actually done really, really well. How has how have the Rapids done against Eastern Conference opponents this year?
You know, it's interesting. It's a little bit difficult because, you know, with Houston and Sporting Kansas City moving to the West from the East, so sometimes you still think of those clubs as Eastern Conference teams. But, you know, certainly they're in the West now. You know, we've played New York City FC. We tied them 0-0. We had 27 shots, couldn't put one past the keeper. we played New England Revolution at home. We had over 20 shots. We were the better team, got unlucky. You know, I think I'm not as big of a believer in the disparity between the East and the West. I think that the quality is there in the Eastern Conference. I don't buy that because a team is in the East, they're suddenly have an easier road. I look at it that in the Eastern Conference, you know, you've got the New England Revolution who were MLS Cup runners up. You've got DC United who aren't too shabby themselves. Columbus Crew or Orlando City has shown that they belong in this league. New York City has now reeled off 3 wins in a row, and then you've got the weirdness that is Toronto. You know, I think that there is a lot of quality in the East, and so I don't look at it so much as to, you know, the East is better than the West. You know, I think that the Rapids have done well when they've been on the road. The Rapids have struggled when they've been at home, regardless as to whether they've played the East or the Western Conference.
So, John, let me ask you this. You know, coming to Orlando, obviously you said this was the first time since that 2013 game. I think Tony Cascio was actually with you guys in that time, was he not?
He was. I don't remember if he played. I do know that we lost 3-1. That was painful.
Yeah, well, at least you guys don't have Stuart Seyus anymore.
Oh, dude, really? You're going to bring that up? No.
I'm sorry. I had to.
It's funny you say that because we were I remember watching that game and some of the things that we were saying about Seyus at the time. I you know, this is a family-friendly podcast, but and now he plays for Atlanta Silverbacks, but yeah, I do remember watching that game. I do remember in the Citrus Bowl, and the thing that struck me was that it wasn't a big crowd, but a very, very passionate supporter section. And I've had a chance to watch a couple of Orlando City games this year. Your supporters are fantastic. Your fans are fantastic. You know, and that's really where Major League Soccer is going. And I think that's one of the models as the newer franchises come on. You know, Atlanta in 2017. Minnesota United allegedly at some point coming in, LAFC, you know, maybe Sacramento at some point. I mean, you guys, you're doing it right. Your supporters group seem very organic and very genuine. It doesn't seem forced like other teams I might mention that are a little bit north of you that are new. And so that's what I remember most about the 2013 match is just how passionate you guys were and all the freaking purple, man.
It's going to be interesting. This will be our first midweek game as an MLS franchise, so it'll be interesting to see if the draw is there, because certainly the team has gotten a great deal of support thus far, mostly playing weekends, and we've got two big midweek games in back-to-back weeks. We've got a league game this week. We've got Columbus Crew coming in for U.S. Open Cup next week, so it'll be interesting to see sort of if we can somewhat fill the bowl for those couple of games. But let's talk a little bit maybe about, you know, what we can expect on Wednesday night. What do you see as the big key matchup on the field?
You know, I think it would be easy to say Stop Kaká, you know, and I don't necessarily know that he strikes me as a player that I don't know that you can necessarily stop him. You accept that he's on the pitch and you kind of deal with that. For me, it's going to be how the Rapids deal with the Kyle Larins of the world. You know, how do you stop Orlando City? Because the way I've seen is that their attack generates, and if you can somehow figure out a way, because Orlando seems a team that really likes to possess the ball. If you could somehow disrupt that ball when it's getting into that final third. To me, that's key for the Rapids, regardless of who's bringing the ball up. For the Rapids to get a result in this match, they have to be very, very compact. They have to be very organized on the back line because if you're not, Orlando City will punish you. I mean, look at the LA Galaxy game from, 3, 4, 5 weeks ago? I mean, LA was not organized in the back at all, and Orlando City punished them. And that's the thing, that if the Rapids can go in there and be organized, be aware of where the Orlando City offensive players are on the pitch, I think they've got some chances. I don't know that it's one single person, but that number 10 guy isn't bad on your team, just for the record.
Fair enough. So you talked about, the team as a group, what you guys need to do to stop Orlando, but what do you feel you need to do, on the offensive end, or just in general, in order to actually get a point or 3 points from, down here in Florida?
Quite frankly, I'd like to see the ball move from the midfield. The Rapids seem to be a team that want to try to run up the wings, cross the ball in. They're not having any success with that. You look at their goal numbers, and they're just not. I mean, you could talk about creating chances all you want, but ultimately it's about putting the ball in the back of the net. And the Rapids aren't doing that. I would love to see it, come up through the middle of the field through a Marcelo Sarvis, a Sam Cronin, Lucas Pitinari, run the ball up through Dylan Powers. And then, from that point, if he needs to distribute it on the wing, that's fine. But just bringing the ball up on the outsides has not worked for the Rapids. If they can move it up through the middle, I think they've got a chance to, put some pressure on the Orlando net.
Well, I think we're going to have an interesting game anyway, no matter how it shakes out. We're going to see if Orlando can bounce back from a 2-0 loss to Montreal that stopped a good bit of momentum going. We're going to see if Colorado can maintain a little momentum from that late goal against FC Dallas. And really, I think what we'd all like to see down here is for you to put some of that good Colorado craft beer on the plane with the team and deliver that for us on Wednesday night.
Yeah, it's not too bad. there is a fair amount of decent beer here along the Front Range, I'll say that.
John Roche, Managing Editor of Burgundy Waves, thank you so much for joining us. Before we let you get out of here, though, we need to get your prediction, because we always put our guests on the spot and make them come away with a match prediction. So hit us with your prediction.
Honestly, I think it's I would love to pull for the Burgundy boys at this point, but I think Orlando City gets a 1-0 victory.
Well, we haven't had too many clean sheets, so that would be nice from our perspective.
The Rapids don't score a whole lot of goals, and they don't give up a whole lot, so we'll see.
All right, John, thanks so much for joining us, and we'll see how it all shakes out.
All right, guys, take care.
Well, Austin, it's time to call it a podcast. We want to thank our guest, John Roche, Managing Editor from Burgundy Wave. He's a pretty cool dude. I like John a lot.
Yeah, fun guy.
He gave us quite a lot of good information on the Colorado Rapids, and he shoots from the hip, man. He's not pulling any punches. I do always get nervous, though, when the guest predicts Orlando City will win. That always makes me nervous for some reason. I guess it's superstition on my part. I don't know. So before we get out of here, though, Austin, of course, we have to give our always incorrect predictions on the game, and I think none of us were really correct about the Montreal match last week, in last week's podcast. Predictions for Colorado.
Yeah, well, I said 2-0 for Orlando last week, and it was 2-0 to Montreal, so I don't know. John didn't really seem too confident about his team, so that makes me a little more confident in our team. Okay. I'm actually going to say what he said, a 1-0 victory for Orlando City, and I'm going to say Kaká gets another penalty kick.
Okay, well, that would be interesting, because I'd really like to see Kaká get the record for penalty kick goals in an MLS season. I think the record is, I want to say it's 7?
I Yeah, either 7 or 9. I remember. I think
might be 9, but yeah. I mean, but anyway, he's halfway there. So, I have a hard time reading this game because of a few things. Number one, don't know Collins' availability. Number two, Breck didn't look good the other night, and there's been some rumblings he may be playing hurt, and that kind of bothers me. He just hasn't found himself yet with this team, at least not since moving up to midfield. I thought he was phenomenal left back. Colorado couldn't put FC Dallas to bed. I know I watched that game. Fabian Castillo had a lot of chances that he didn't convert on, and it was like, okay. Probably shouldn't have been a 1-0 game at that point late in the game when Colorado tied it. But Orlando coming off a 2-0 loss. I think they're going to be determined. I think they're going to work hard. I'm going to go ahead with the prediction that I gave John in our cross-blog Q&As. There should be a Q&A from me on Burgundy Wave. And John answered my questions, and that'll be posted at 2 o'clock on Wednesday, on game day. I'm going to go with that prediction, which was 2-1 to Orlando City. I know Colorado's been stingy, but I just feel like after a game like Kyle Larin had and a game like Kaká had, that they're going to work, a little bit harder, a little bit smarter, and they're going to be a little bit more determined. I think Orlando gets 2. But I just don't know with Colin out that they're going to be able to keep a clean sheet, so I'll say 1 against. So 2-1 to City is my sure-to-be-incorrect prediction. You can ridicule me later at your leisure. So that said, I think it's about time to get on out of here, call it a podcast. Please visit us on iTunes and give us a rating, and please leave a review if you would be so kind, because that's how we can raise ourselves up in their analytics, and more people will be able to find us. That would be great. We would appreciate that. And if you are interested in supporting us, please give us drop us an email, themainland@gmail.com. It's M-A-N-E like a lion's mane, not M-A-I-N like Main Street. themainland@gmail.com if you would like to talk about supporting this Mainland podcast. So, Austin, you got any last thoughts for this week? We've got Colorado Rapids, and then next Tuesday we'll have Columbus Crew in U.S. Open Cup action.
Yeah, I just sure hope we score goals. That's all I'm hoping for.
Scoring goals is a good thing, and I support it 100% for Orlando City. I'm against it when it comes to other teams.
It's a good strategy.
Yeah, those are my positions, and I'm not budging on them. You can't talk me out of those positions. So, okay, folks, that's going to wrap it up. We'll call it a podcast. I think this was episode 18, and I'll have to look at it later and figure out if it really was. Because I lose track. That's just the way I am. There's so many games. They're coming fast and furious. And then I'm also going to be at the Mexico-Costa Rica friendly on Saturday. So there's a lot of soccer. And yay, U.S. women for advancing to Friday against China. But for Austin David, I'm Michael Citro saying, go City!